Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Actually, it's going to be more than that today. We're going to be talking about leadership power. And I'm so delighted that you're able to join us today because we've got a wonderful guest. His name is Robert Murray. His publication is titled, It's Already Inside. The subtitle is Nurturing Your Innate Leadership for Business and Life Success. I really resonated with the material because for me, there have been a lot of lessons in life that I've had to go through to learn about leadership and that it doesn't always come with a plaque sitting on a desk. And you can have a title and not be capable of thinking your way out of a paper bag. And I'm sure Robert Murray, my guest, will say the same thing, that he's met people that maybe have been given that title. They're the leader, but really, they're not. They are not people that understand what leadership really is. Robert Murray, welcome to the show.
No, thank you very much, Donna.
The aspect of leadership, before we went on the air, you made a comment. You thought that the term leadership was grossly overused and that when people hear it, they sort of turn off to that word. How has it been overused, and why do you think people turn off with it?
It is overused, I think, in business today, and I'm talking strictly the business sense, and that, you know, somebody, because they have credentials, potentially educational credentials, they are bestowed the title of leader and given a group of people to lead, and I think it's been overused because it's not. Leadership to me is more about the emotional side and the right brain side of your thinking and connecting with people. And it's being overused today because the people who get, and as you said, and I think it's an absolutely brilliant one, they couldn't organize themselves out of a paper bag. I like to use the phrase that they couldn't organize a party in a brewery.
Now, I like that one. That is a visual. It's really good. Could not organize a party in a brewery. Okay, that one I like. I'll have to remember that one.
Exactly. And I see this every day in business, and it's because they're approaching things from the left brain side. They're approaching things from decision points and data and spreadsheets and facts and figures. And at the end of the day, leadership's all about getting people to do things that they wouldn't normally do on their own. For a bunch of reasons, you know, whether it be fear, whether it, you know, whatever it is, you can't get people to do it unless they're emotionally bought into it, and that's all right brain stuff, and it has nothing to do with facts and figures.
Now, with you, I want my audience to know a little bit about your background. You have worked with Fortune 100 organizations. You're chairman of Growth Point Group. You're a director on the board of Russell Brewing. An advisory board member of the Element 4, an associate professor on strategy, marketing, and leadership at British Columbia Institute of Technology School of Business in Vancouver. And you have many opportunities to speak and present your concepts. And I really think it's a very sad statement many times that the mentoring of potential leaders is not supported to the degree that I feel it should be supported in the business environment. For some reason, people go to school, they might even get a master's in business or a PhD, and the real world and what they got on a piece of paper are so far apart. Without the right mentorship, sometimes they're put into positionings of responsibility that should no more have been considered than a man in the moon. I wouldn't care if they were an honor student at the top of the honor roll. Life in real life is one thing, and grade level is something else.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, and this is not a slight against education at all.
No, you know,
because I am,
at all.
I'm in the education system, and the best leader I have ever worked for, bar none, had a grade 10 education, and mm-hmm. the worst leader that I ever worked for, bar none, had a PhD in business from one of the finest business schools in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. you, at the end of the day, it's all about connecting with people, and the best leader that I ever worked for, the gentleman who had the grade 10 education, he today still is masterful at connecting people emotionally and getting people to understand why things need to be done a certain way. And when people understand why, they buy into it, they get it, and they can connect that to their own personal why, and then away they go. And they'll mm-hmm. do magical things when that happens.
I think that is the way a real leader works anyway. I don't think...
Yeah.
I've always said, and to me, a leader is also a teacher, and I've always said a good teacher wants whoever they are teaching to surpass them. They want to give them the best of what they have, and they want to support them so that they have such a strong base and such a level, I'll use the term self-esteem, and an ability to look at life with clear eyes, so that they can take whatever they learn and actually polish it with a number of additional facets and just shine a brighter light into the world of life and experience so that others will continue to grow and expand. And that's just what I have felt for most of my life. And I really liked what you said, and I'm quoting from your book, leadership talent, which is innate within us, needs nurturing and practice to bring it out. Everything you need is inside. And you talked about yourself at the beginning of the book about how you had worked for 10 years as a tradesman. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, what a fabulous apprenticeship. What kind of trade were you involved with?
I was an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, that's all right. As an electrician, did you apprentice with someone? I mean, what got you into that?
It was one of those things out of necessity, actually. You know, I'm from a farming background, and I come from a family that was very, very poor. And I married my high school sweetheart, who also came from a family that was very poor. And we both wanted to go to university, but there was just absolutely no way that our families could afford to put us through school. So I decided to get a job, and the only job I could get was a trades job at that time. So I put my now wife through university, and I apprenticed as an electrician, fully with the intention that after my wife got out of school, I would then go back to school myself.
Mm-hmm.
One thing happens, you know, next thing I know, 10 years later, I'm a journeyman electrician. But I have no regrets whatsoever from it. I learned so much about leadership. I learned so much about life. And when subsequent years come along and I'm now find myself in the C-suite of Fortune 100 organization, one of the largest companies in the world, I was the chief customer operations officer for. At that point in time, I realized that it was my tradesman training that got me to where I was, not necessarily the business training, because as a tradesman, you know, business people, business leaders today, executives that I see in the boardrooms today, cannot solve problems the way tradesmen can.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot work in teams the way tradesmen can. And they don't understand, you know, as tradesmen do, that when they're faced with a challenge, right away they think of solution. And that training served me so well as a young leader. And again, got me to where I was eventually, you know, when I bowed out of corporate life, that's what it was that got me there, was that tradesman training.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a wonderful example. There may be people listening today to this conversation and saying, oh, I just hate my job. I just really hate my environment. And yet, I've never met someone that I would consider successful, whether no matter what their level of monetary experience was. Real success is built on involvement in various environments. And sometimes those environments that we really, really don't have an affinity for are the best teachers. They may give us the disciplines that we need and pull out of us some of the skills that we'll be able to demonstrate easily and readily. And I think people skills are just absolutely right at the top of the list. You have a wonderful story about a young man who has been such an inspiration to you, and you feel that he is a leader, and I would agree. Terry Fox is his name. Would you tell us about Terry?
You know, I was so blessed, and another big part of where my success in life is to do with Terry. When I was in grade 8, I met Terry for the very first time. And long story short, here was a gentleman who lived a number of miles away from school and got himself out of bed every morning, did his paper route back in the days when papers were still delivered to our houses in first thing in the morning. And then he would run to school with his books and his basketball, and he would get there before anybody else. And he'd spent the entire, an hour and a half before school started shooting hoops in the gymnasium. And he did that every day after school as well. This guy was small. He was skinny. We like to say there was more meat on a pencil. And he never made the basketball team the first year. The second year, he made the second string. The third year, he finally broke into the starting lineup. His perseverance and his determination was so inspiring to see his work ethic as a teenager. But more importantly was his attitude and how he just brought everybody around him up, no matter what was going on in the school. And teenagers go through an awful lot of stress and pressure as teenagers, and he just—he was just a great guy to be around, and we loved being around him. First year university, he made a basketball team. He made the starting lineup of the university basketball team, and he wasn't even on a scholarship. At the end of the year, he had some nagging knee pain, and he went to see a doctor. 5 days later, he was in the hospital, scheduled to have his leg amputated because of cancer. And I remember being in the hospital room the night after his surgery, and there was about 20 of us there, all friends from school, and we're 19, 20 years old, and it was quite an emotional experience for us, because at that point in time in life, you think that you are immortal, you think you're going to live forever, and nothing's ever going to happen to you, and then here we were in the room with, one of our best friends, and a guy that we looked up to for everything in life, and there he was. We thought his life was over. And at that moment in time, this most inspiring moment in my life, he started talking to us, and there's a number of us in the room, and he started talking about how he was going to become, he's already signed up for a wheelchair basketball team, that he was going to learn how to run. And he'd read a story about a one-legged runner. And we walked out of the hospital room feeling elated and once again motivated by this guy. And Terry Fox is a very, very famous Canadian. He went on to attempt to run across Canada on one leg at a time when prosthetic legs were not meant for running. And eventually he made it halfway across the country before he was stricken again with cancer, this time lung cancer, and which eventually took his life. The moral of the story or the ending of the story is that since that time, and it's been over 20 years now since that time, Terry Fox runs happen all over the world. I know they happen in the United States as well. They've raised close to $1 billion in funds for cancer research. And the cancer that took Terry's life is curable today because of the research from his foundation. So, he's just such an inspiration to me. And on those days at 5 o'clock in the morning when the alarm clock goes off and I just don't feel like it anymore, I just want to roll over and hit the snooze button, I think of Terry and I get moving again. And that's what keeps me moving every time I feel like I can't.
I really enjoyed your story in the book, It's Already Inside, about Kilimanjaro, your experience there. But I especially loved the comment you put in that was made by your wife, because when you were on this expedition, you were with porters, you didn't have to worry about anything, and breakfast was served to you in the morning and all of this, and you had mentioned to your wife after you came back that it would sure be nice to have tea in bed every morning. She said, okay, if you sleep out in the yard every night in a tent, I'll bring you tea the next morning. And I loved her sense of humor. I said, yes, go, girl, that is really the great attitude. I thought that was so good. Anyway, have this wonderful story about Kilimanjaro, which is really something to read because it has a lot of lessons in it. But I wanted to go to the fourth chapter in your book. It's titled The Magic Question, and I want to quote from your book. You said, recently I had a discussion with a well-known nuclear fusion scientist. He told me his biggest problem is that new PhD graduates he hires have no ability for critical thinking. Now, that is something that when you're hiring these highly intelligent, extremely well-educated individuals, and this man is saying they do not do critical thinking. What is your definition of critical thinking, and what can enable someone to develop their critical thinking?
Yeah, that's it's a phenomena that I'm seeing everywhere. I was in Los Angeles speaking last week, and I was in the UK speaking the week before that. And this discussion came up in both, after the speaking event, the meet and greet, that this question came up as to what is going on with university graduates that we're getting today where they can't seem to solve problems. My take on it is that the children or young adults that are coming out of the university system today have never known a life without a cell phone or a computer. And they've never known a life without virtually everything that they've needed being provided for them. And gone are the days when you were playing as a child and as a teenager, you had to make believe, you had to make do with what you had, pots and pans, cardboard boxes. You were able to take this world of make-believe, and you were able to create from that. And so the good and the bad of today, the new millennials that we have today, is that they know where to get information and answers to questions faster than I can. However, if the answer's not readily available for them, they're lost. And that's what I've been finding. And when I'm working with and mentoring the younger adults these days, what I'm working with them on is critical thinking, and throwing questions at them and getting them to think through the problem without any access to information to solve that. And it's something that needs to be nurtured more. And I think that if you are in business and you're going to be hiring people, you're going to find this. You're going to see more and more of this. And so that's why I wrote the chapter on the magic question, which is just a very, very simple question, which actually gets people moving towards critical thinking. And, it's something that I use to solve problems with at home, something I use to solve problems with in the office. And it's just a very, very simple question. And it goes something like this: what does good look like? I urge people to write it down. I urge people that when somebody comes to them and they've got the world's toughest problem, so they think, whether that be a teenager or whether that be somebody in the workplace, I always listen, hear them out, and then at the end of it, I say, what does good look like? Just by hearing that question, I see an instant change in their body language, and I see instant movement towards solution. And that is... as leaders today, that's what we have to do. And you mentioned it earlier about the job of a leader is to educate and to create people who are actually better than ourselves. And I truly believe that. I believe that, my job as a leader is to hire people, nurture them, and have them become better than what I am. And that's what I use that sort of magical question these days for, is to inspire and nurture that critical thinking.
In our world today, and this is global, we are seeing people that have been given quote-unquote leadership positioning, and we find they're totally inept. These people are being paid hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of dollars, and they've created a quagmire of financial destruction, and yet they're still in the same positions. And you made a comment about unsuccessful businesses, and I don't care whether it's a government, because a government is, even though it really, any government in the world is not necessarily in the positioning of developing stuff, but they are there, and they're supposed to run efficiently. Of course, some people would say that's an oxymoron, but anyway, they have an infection, and I like that word, because that's what I've said. We've got an insidious cancer that is among the leaders in the world of many business organizations, of governments. And you make a comment, you say, senior leaders think they're the only ones who know what's going on and that the people on the front line do not understand. So it's best we just keep pushing them along thinking we know what's best. And I was watching a program last night on television, and I watched this and I thought the ineptitude of people in positionings, and it was regarding a certain governmental structure, this type of thing. And I thought, this is a perfect example of what we're going to be talking about in the interview tomorrow, how people will all sit around a table, they're all dressed nicely in suits, everybody's got their little title, and the communication is virtually nil, and there isn't a problem solver among them, and they're all interested in maintaining their own positioning. Now, this really is self-destructive, whether it's in a government or it's in a business, because it won't hold. It just will not hold. And why is it that this just isn't gotten by so many?
Yeah, you know, that's a brilliant question, and I've sat in so many different boardrooms as an executive, and grown tired of the conversation in the boardroom. First of all, the language is not English. You know, the language that's spoken in the boardroom is something where you, in my opinion, there's a lot of executives that are just not comfortable in their own skin and have to continuously prove that they're smarter than someone else. As a result of that, the language of business and the language of boardrooms today has gotten to the point where it's hard to understand if you're an outsider trying to listen in. The other part of it is that this goes back to my tradesman days, is that being on the front line, I understand that the people that are tradesmen are very intelligent people, and they get it. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, when they take off their tool pouch and head home, they're heading home to running a business, the business I call life. You know, they're having to manage cash flow at home. They're trying to manage cash reserves. They are planning for the future. They're leading their family. They're leaders in the community. They're Cub Scout, Girl Scout leaders, Little League coaches. These are highly intelligent people. It's just their choice in life is that's what their passion is around being a tradesperson. Mm-hmm. Get into the boardroom, and the boardroom executives that I see a lot of truly believe that they're smarter than other people, and that people in their organization won't understand, which is, as you said, you call it a cancer, and it truly is, because if, as a leader, if you're not understanding what's going on in your followers' life, there's no way that you will be able to motivate them to get done what you have to get done in terms of business objectives. It just won't happen. You might be able to motivate them through fear, but that's a short-term strategy.
Very short-term. You know, that doesn't
absolutely
cut it. Does not.
No,
cut
absolutely.
It. In fact, actually, it'll turn on you. It'll turn on you.
It always
does. Like a razor. It'll just slice you into ribbons.
Yeah, it always does. You'll get short-term results, absolutely. And then the whoever's the implementer of that strategy will look like a hero. However, they'll, you know, a year from now, they'll look like a zero. It'll turn on them. They'll fail. And that's why also you'll see a lot of movement amongst the executive ranks. However, their resume gets them picked up by another company where they'll deploy the same short-term strategy of motivation through fear and intimidation.
Mm-hmm. And the same results occur. Now, you did something that I thought was very well stated, and this is finder versus problem finder, or solution finder versus problem finder. Now, I really like this story because you were encountering, and this was at the beginning of a fiscal year, somewhere about close to 2000, I believe. And you were really concerned Because when you started working with a goal plan for a whole new agenda with your team, they just went, they went into a brain freeze. How mm-hmm. is it that you got them out of that brain freeze?
We just come off of a year of explosive growth, and it was because of the team, and they were hugely successful. And as in business, when you've had a successful year, there's always going to be more that's required of you. I've never actually been in a business where the targets are softer 1 year versus the year previous. So that's just the fact of life. I had a good team, a really, really good team, talented people, and they understood the vision. They understood where we're going, and they're all aligned in terms of values. And as you said, they had a bit of a brain freeze. I rolled out the new plan, the new objectives, and they right away thought that it was a mountain that they couldn't climb. And I knew that they could. I really knew that they could, and nothing was working with them. So I, at one point in the meeting, I stopped the meeting, and I asked them all to go get their jackets on and grab their car keys and meet me in the parking lot. And I walked out. They were confused, but I walked out of the room. Well, 5 minutes later, they started to assemble in the parking lot of our office building, and still very confused looking. And I just said, get in your cars and follow me. So then I led this procession of about 10 cars through the local area, and I did a bunch of twists and turns, and I was really just leading them in a big circle. And I stopped at this one place. I got out of my car, and I started to walk. And it was a beautiful January morning, and there was a bit of a crisp dew on the grass, and the sun was shining. It was just a gorgeous day, and I walked out into the middle of this field, and the middle of this field happened to be the middle of a cemetery. And they strolled up behind me, they're all still looking very confused, and when they all got there, I just stood there silently, and one of them, bravely said, okay, Bob, tell me, what is this all about? And then I just, without making eye contact with them, I just looked out across all the tombstones, and I said to them, you see all those people out there? They would all trade places with you in an instant. And I said, what we have in front of us is small compared to, to what you're seeing in front of you here. Do you think we can start thinking about solutions versus all the problems? And you could have heard a pin drop. And then I just turned and walked back to the car and went back to the office. They all followed me, and they all followed me back into the meeting room, and we got down to business in terms of how we were going to achieve the plan. End of the story?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, just to say quickly, the end of the story was that year they achieved 160% of their plan.
Wow. Absolutely wow. The book, It's Already Inside, I think is a good read for anyone. And if you are an individual that is an entrepreneur, if you are someone that's working for a company, if you're an individual perhaps that is retired and you want to volunteer, do work, you can benefit other people's lives, you say, this is what I want to do. It doesn't make any difference. You lead by example. And there is that part within all of us that wants us to recognize who we are, what we are, and that we can take the best of our skills and our abilities and put them to good use so we make this world a better place. Now, Robert Murray is my guest today. His book is It's Already Inside. And you'll find in his book a story about him working in Romania, dealing with a lack of ethics, corruption, a lack of value, and how he turned that around. Go to his website, robert-murray.com, and that's M-U-R-R-A-Y, robert-murray.com. And you'll find out more. This is a man who walks the walk, and the reason he wrote the book is that he'd like for you to be able to walk your walk in your own way, understanding that it really is all inside of you. And you just need to know you can bring it out and be a demonstration of the best. Robert Murray, thank you so very much for being my guest today.
My pleasure, Donna. My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We will be taking a break in just a moment. Robert-Murray.com. Check out his website. Don't look down on yourself. Realize that everything you invest in with education is going to make you more of what you want to be. And as you know, when you listen to the show on a regular basis, I'm a strong believer in building your library so that you have friends. That's what books are. They're best buds. You can take them with you everywhere, and they'll make your life richer. Donna Siebel here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Siebel, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome, welcome. I'm so delighted you're joining me today. Telephone lines are now open at 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, I'll give you my mental impressions, and you're welcome to ask me a question about something that's of concern to you. And I want to give a quote here by Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. He said, "If we are to go forward, we must go back and rediscover those precious values, that all reality hinges on moral foundations, and that all reality has spiritual control." To me, when I read those words and I thought about our conversation today, I think it is so important that we get in touch with those values that mean the most to us. And each one of us, I think, have pretty much the basic stuff. We love honesty, integrity. But there may be some other things that you value too. And you need to remember that you can honor those and you can live those. I think what's so disturbing is that if we're not careful, we allow other people to put a dark shadow on those values that we hold so dear. We need to be able to turn on our own light and say, excuse me, these values are worth protecting. These values are important. And if someone does not share your value of ethics, of honesty, of clarity, whatever your values might be, then you need to make it okay to let that person go out of your life. Yes, that's true. And it is so very, very important, the old saying, to thine own self be true. It's not easy to do. It really isn't easy to do because so much in life says, well, you've got to do it this way because that's what everybody's saying that you should do. The mark of an individual is one that thinks for themselves. And my guest, Robert Murray, when he was talking about critical thinking, it is a process we have to learn. And it is only when we step up to life that we are going to have an opportunity to know how to think critically. We're all going to have to crawl before we can learn how to run. Once in a while, someone does that first. Someone runs first. But there's always going to be times when you fall down, you make mistakes. But again, it's being with people who think, being with people who are willing to dare. Steve Jobs was known for that. Steve Jobs, one of the reasons that he was just so revered by so many people is that he thought outside the box. He would say, well, how about this, or how about that, or how about the other? The staff at Google, I've been reading a lot of different things about the people that work at Google. They sit around and they brainstorm. What if? How about if we do this, that, or the other? When you're in the company of people that are open-minded, when your leadership, when the people that are around you say, let's look at our options, what can we consider? It is empowering. It is not disempowering. It is empowering. So if you find yourself in an environment where it is exactly what you don't want, look at it. Say, how can I learn from this? How can I leverage this? You may not choose to stay in that environment, whether it's a mental, spiritual, physical, emotional challenge. But remember, out of every adversity, there usually is a gold nugget that you'll be able to take with you. And it may not make any dollars at the bank, necessarily, when you discover it. But it sure will make your life a lot better if you learn to understand it. And that is what critical thinking can be all about. I've known a lot of people that were considered geniuses that were some of the biggest jackasses I've ever known. They had IQs that were just phenomenal. And yet they didn't know their way around a grocery store. Hard to believe, but it's true. So intelligence, creative thinking, as he said, it's the creative side, what we'd call the feminine side, the right side of the brain, however you want to describe it. We need to understand that there's a balance with both. But I'll tell you what, I love brainstorming with people, especially those that are knowledgeable, because they're going to give you sometimes answers you would never have considered. Never have considered. I've done that so often in my counseling with people. And they'll go, well, I didn't think of that. I said, of course not, because you can't see or have a feeling of what perhaps I'm able to perceive. And someone will say to me flippantly, well, you're a psychic, you know it all. No, I don't. I don't know it all. I like what Richard Bach said. If you're still, and this is in his book, Illusions, if you are still on this planet, your job isn't done. So just know there's always going to be something. As long as you are in this life experience, it's going to challenge you one way or another. Don't be a loner. Don't sit up on the top of the mountain and think that you can just make things happen. You can only stay on the top of a mountain for so much time. You're going to have to come down eventually. And when you do, you're going to enter into a whole new level of experience. So remember, those ups and downs in life, those challenges in life, look at them with different eyes. Because you have those so that you can learn how to be even more valuable and richer with experience in this experience we call life, so that you can do other things for other people. Donna Siebel here. Give me a call if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. I wanted to share a story about a woman. I just love this. I love success stories. I always have, ever since I was a kid. The stories about people achieving things they never thought they could achieve. And often we think it's becoming a rocket science or something else, but it could be something so simple as learning how to dance. Yes, I've got a photo of a couple in front of me. The lady's name is Mary, and I love the spelling. It's M-E-R-R-Y. She lives in Louisiana, and when she turned 61 years old, that was a big, oh my goodness, I'm 61 time. But what happened was she made up her mind that she was going to do something for herself that she had dreamed of when she was a kid, and that was to learn to dance. That's right. She was watching a showcase, and this was in December of 2008, and she was seeing all kinds of different things going on, and she decided she'd take some ballroom dance classes. She wanted to learn some steps. And she said, you know what? She mentioned to someone that was in the class with her, I would just love to do one of those professional dance scenes. She said, oh, that would be so fabulous. Well, the person she was sharing her wish with said, look, Mary, get real. These professionals wouldn't want to dance with you. You're just not good enough. You're mediocre. You just haven't got it. Well, when she was younger, she was good at the dancing she did. Well, when you're 61 years old and your whole life has been dedicated to other people doing things and you're wanting to rebirth your dream, those are pretty harsh words. Now, of course, her friend did not want to put her down. She was being, what she thought, kind. After all, Mary was 61. She wasn't in her teens or her 20s or her 30s. She was getting close to being called an elderly lady. She was a grandmother. Well, when she was in college, Mary had entered a group called the Kilgore Rangerettes. They were a precision dance team. And it just didn't seem practical. With the reality of life, she said, nah, math is my major. I'll become a math teacher. And that's what she did. Now, what happened after this encounter with this friend? Again, she's 61. She talked to her husband. She said, what do you think? His name's Alan. He said, I think you ought to go after your dream. To heck with what your friend said. That's their thoughts. Those aren't yours. But the friend's words just kept repeating over and over again like an endless looping tape. Well, she the following year watched another Christmas showcase, and that little negative mental tape was going, you can't do it, you're too old for this. But you know what she started doing? She started, every time that old tape would play in, you're too old, you just don't have it, blah, 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 blah. Don't you just hate those tapes? Well, she decided she was going to become mindful. She had kept up her dance classes, and she decided she was not going to buy into that anymore. She made the choice. She shifted her thinking, and she said, I'm going to sign up. By golly, she signed up for the application to have a chance to dance with these professionals, and she was paired up with a guy by the name of Bob, who is a professional dancer. They were going to be doing a show. And he said, you got it. Let's go out and just wow them. At 61 years of age, she ends up doing the dance, her precision, everything that she had known when she was a young person, with all of the practicing that she had been doing, came back. It was showtime. She and Bob just shined, and her last segment of the performance was doing the splits. Try doing that at 61 years of age, much less if you were 17. I know. I've done the splits. And it takes time to work those muscles so that they'll stretch. She performed beautifully. She said it absolutely was amazing. And then in 2011, there was the United Country Western Dance Council World Championships in Nashville. She didn't know anything about country dancing. And guess what? Cowboy boots and all, she was right there in that competition, and they took first place. So you need to know you can always try for something that you never even dreamed you could try for. I've got a friend. She just retired from being a high school teacher. She's always wanted to run. She's got the body build of a runner. And by golly, do you know, she went out, and she is in her 60s. And she decided she was going to compete. Well, she got criticized. You don't have the right tennis shoes on. You don't have this. You don't have that. Well, you know what? She really didn't care. She got out on the track, and she just heard the bell go off, and, man, she was running. She won. She is now competing for the Senior Olympics, all because she was willing to try. Now, if you're in your teens, you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, I don't care. This is something we need to remember. And I share these stories with you because you can be a winner, just like Mary, in your own way and whatever it is that you want to do. Just go for it. You've got nothing to lose. You've got everything to gain, whether it's running track, sewing a quilt, competing in whatever way that you want to. Remember, the big deal is you're competing against yourself. So take care of those old tapes and put them in the shredder, won't you? Replace them with what it is you really want. Donna's People here. We're going to take a break for a minute, and we'll be back with more good things to share. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. Do you believe in synchronicity? I do. Do you have stories about coincidences, how you were in the right place, or you just, for some reason, you were motivated to go in and talk to somebody or stop at a store, and you didn't know why? You had to turn around, go home, and the phone rings, and someone in your family was calling you with important news. Those things have happened to me so many times in my life. I just know that it's very much a part of reality. For whatever reasons, that synchronization, that circumstance of coincidence is there in life. And we're not always able to explain it, but it's as if something is just motivating us, our radar, if you will. The spirit self, or whatever you want to use as a description, is putting you into that environment that is non-logical, but it's working. There was a scientist, his name was Camille Flammarion. He was a Frenchman, and he loved stories about coincidences. Now, we're going to be traveling back to 1871. This happened to him. He was working at his home in Paris on his book, L'Atmosphère. A powerful wind came through the open window by his desk, takes the manuscript off of his desk out into the street. It's raining outside. It's raining. The manuscript is blown over to the publishing house that he was working with, a half a mile away. Not one page of the manuscript was lost. Now, this is what he said. He recorded this because this was so unusual. He said, "My study in Paris is lighted by three windows. The first window was open, looking out on the chestnut trees of the avenue. The sky was clouded, the wind rose, And suddenly, the third window, which must have been badly fastened, was violently blown open by a gale from the southwest, which disarranged all my papers and lifting the loose papers I had just written. To go down and hunt for my pages would seem to me be time lost, and I was very sorry to lose them. What was my surprise to receive a few days later from the Lahore's printing office in the Rue de Fleury, about a half a mile from where I live, that very chapter printed without one page missing, they had gotten it. Now, this was a chapter that had been written about the strange doings of the wind. What had happened? A very simple thing. The porter of the printing office noticed on the ground the leaves of the manuscript. And, of course, they were wet. It was raining. He thought he must have dropped them himself. He picked them up, and having arranged them very carefully in order, he took them to the printing office, telling no one of what happened. A little more, and some credulous person might have asserted that it was the wind that had brought them to the printing office. Person in the right place, picking up the papers and taking them. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit of a different twist. Fascinating story. Amazing how things work out. I just love the unusual. What about you? I think it's fun to talk about those things, because it shows you that life is not black and white. It's really a rainbow. There's all kinds of things going on. Well, let's talk about taxes. Oh, whoopee, isn't that an exciting subject? Well, I think for most of us, we'd go, yeah, right. Oh, I don't think I want to even deal with it. Well, it's something we have to deal with because it is a reality of life. Whether you're in business, whether you're not, it doesn't make any difference. Almost everyone has to file a tax return. Now, one of the things that happens is you find that over the years you'll have box after box after box after box after box of tax returns. You should always check with your CPA, especially if you've had a business, if you can, you know, shred old documents, how long you should keep them, etc. Now, your old tax returns, the IRS says you should keep them at least 3 years. It has the right to go back that far when it's auditing past returns, but I would suggest you play it safe. And the reason I say it is that I have had clients, I've known people where the IRS went back 5 to 7 years. So it's a good idea that you keep them for old tax records for at least 7, maybe even as long as 10 years. And there are some papers you may never want to get rid of, especially if there's been a purchase, a sale of a company, et cetera. Check with your CPA because that is very, very important. Also, remember, even though things are being done electronically, always have a paper trail. I cannot tell you how important that is. And I have a friend that said, oh, I put everything on my little stick, my little memory stick. And I said, well, that's great. But I guarantee you, if something happens to that stick, you better have a backup. And it wasn't too long after I had suggested that to this person that I became aware of someone that they had had a memory stick, and that stick ended up getting damaged somehow where they couldn't retrieve the records. They had sent the information to an accountant, and the accountant said, I can't even get into this stuff. This whole system became corrupted. So you really have to be aware of this. So having the paper, the backup, believe me, my CPA said this, be sure you keep it there. He said you've got to make sure you check and double check what you need to do. Also, remember, e-filing is great. You must remember, though, they can make a mistake. And I know of someone that even though everything had been filed properly, someone on the other end in the IRS office didn't check things properly. So the CPA had to go and call for this individual saying, look, this is what was sent to you. Everything was in order. So human error is there. Make sure you keep track of everything. Those paper trails, they do make a difference. Well, I know we're just about out of time. I do want to let you know we're going to be talking about meditation tomorrow, effortless mind. If this is something that's been very frustrating to you, I think you're going to find this very interesting. Also, we're going to be talking about studies on meditation and how very valuable it is for you as an individual. We're also going to be discussing something that is really going to be some pretty powerful information. We're going to be talking with Dr. Daniel Rudolfassi in New York. This is a man that works with police officers, firemen, works with people that have gone through major traumas. Great guy. And we're going to be talking about a cop doc's guide to understanding terrorism as human evil. And then Karen Berg on Friday is going to be with us. We're going to be discussing reincarnation. I think you'll find all of these subjects fascinating. Tell your friends, invite them to join me, because I always like sharing information that perhaps can create an understanding that otherwise maybe was not there before. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a wonderful day. See you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.